Today marks the one-year anniversary of the Pentagon's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy repeal. This morning, we talk with one of the activists who worked so hard to seek the repeal. In early 2006, Alexander Nicholson, the founder of the largest organization of gay and lesbian service members, Service Members United, along with fellow former military members who had also been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, toured the United States, speaking about the destructive policy at American Legion posts, on radio talk shows, and at press conferences across the South and both coasts. In his book, Fighting to Serve, Behind the Scenes in the War to Repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, he tells the story from the perspective of a person with a central role on every front in the war against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Alexander Nicholson joins us this morning to discuss the repeal as well as the book Fighting to Serve, and we welcome him to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
What is it about this particular policy that, as I said in the introduction, you found to be so destructive?
Well, I think the central issue with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, of course, was that it unnecessarily discriminated against an entire class of men and women who had volunteered or were willing to serve in the armed forces. The other issue was that, as I sort of alluded to just a second ago, it turned out to be completely unnecessary. The policy was really premised on this idea that uncloseted gay men and women in the workplace, especially in the armed forces, would be disruptive to what they called unit cohesion, morale, and combat readiness. In other words, straight service members would be so freaked out by the presence of gays and lesbians around them that the entire cohesion, social cohesion, of a military unit would be degraded, and therefore the unit would not be combat ready anymore, which of course is the entire purpose of the military, to be ready for combat. And so we found out, of course, well, we knew, you know, this before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was even repealed, because many people had begun to defy the law and serve openly anyway. But we found out, especially after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, in the past year since the repeal went into effect, that the premises on which that law was based were completely false. And as soon as the law was repealed, it was smooth sailing, business as usual in the military, and the world did not collapse.
What was it about? Give us an idea of the nature of your discharge. Was it a standard discharge, or was it something that you wanted out because of the policy?
No, mine was my case was being found out by someone else and outed to my superiors and my colleagues in my unit. My discharge was fully honorable. It was administrative,
right,
and it was pretty routine in terms of how Don't Ask, Don't Tell discharges tended to go. Now, of course, you know, I say that my experience sort of fell in the middle of the spectrum in terms of how they go.
But what is that?
Ranged from, you know, anywhere from, the people who actually got in the military and said and discovered, you know, that they were gay and realized that they just didn't, they weren't able to serve closeted, to those who actually had really negative experiences, were harassed, were assaulted, were outed by others intentionally, experienced violence of some sort. That's sort of the either end of the spectrum. But mine was pretty routine and right there in the middle.
And before we go on, I just give us what is a Don't Ask, Don't Tell discharge? I mean, what needed to happen to have that be the label of it?
So basically, there are two types of discharges. There were two types of discharges under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. One is coded homosexual acts, and the other is coded homosexual admission. And there was a lot of blurring of the lines between those two in practice. But what it basically came down to was, you know, if you were, you know, a homosexual act could be considered, being seen holding hands with someone of the same sex, being seen kissing someone of the same sex, you know, even if it's in, some private setting. Being found out to have committed what they call, quote, a homosexual act, so any sort of same-sex sexual or same-sex intimate contact. Most the overwhelming majority of discharges in a Don't Ask, Don't Tell were this category called homosexual admission, which could be someone proactively themselves admitting to being gay. But it more common was being found out to be gay, so being outed by someone else. That's usually how people were discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Do you look at Don't Ask, Don't Tell and its period in our military history as a pure abomination, or do you look at it as a stepping stone in the sense of it had to happen before there could be a repeal? I mean, we look at it as, okay, there's going to be baby steps, because I mean, obviously, you look at it and you think to yourself, well, you just want us to be quiet and not say anything, and how degrading is that? But then you also say, okay, but then to say it is not allowed and then it is allowed, that the way to do it was to have this intermediary step.
You know, that's a good question, and honestly, I think it's both. I think, you know, it was certainly seen and sold and thought of at the time in the early 90s as a stepping stone. It was seen, you know, it was sort of the grand compromise. The politicians who worked on it didn't think they could get a full repeal of the previously regulatory gay ban through the political process, and so they settled for this compromise that became known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Of course, they also admit that what became Don't Ask, Don't Tell in practice years later was nothing like they envisioned or planned when they actually put it in place in the early 90s. But so in that way, yeah, it certainly was a stepping stone. But on the other hand, it was also unfortunate that they had to take that step and go through that stepping stone process, because we ended up seeing that for the past year, when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was actually eliminated, all of the assumptions on which the gay ban was premised turned out to be completely false. And it wasn't even that, you know, I mean, sure, we're, you know, two decades nearly later than we were then, but, you know, it's not like we saw even any bumps in the road. It was a completely smooth and uneventful, yawn-inducing event when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was finally repealed. So I think had they taken that step even in the early 90s, you know, the military is a hierarchical institution. You know, folks tend to, and they're trained to, and they're supposed to, salute and follow orders, and I think had they done that in 1993, the military, there would have been some grumbling. Some people would have been unhappy, but it was still the same hierarchical saluting institution back then that it is today and always has been. And I think had they done it back then even, it would have been business as usual the next day anyway.
You know, God, I hope I hope that would have been the case. I really do. But I also think of how far we have come as a nation in that 20 years of where we weren't even discussing gay marriage, that we were not discussing gay rights, that we are now just looking in the past 5 years of how much progress has been made, so that this repeal then became, as you say, a no-brainer and totally uneventful. Were we as a society as evolved 20 years ago to have accepted that there where we are now? Because certainly a hell of a lot has changed.
That's absolutely true, but keep in mind a couple of things there. First of all, you know, this wasn't a change that was really being imposed in civilian society. This was a change being posed, like I mentioned earlier, within a hierarchical institution whose tradition is, even if we don't like the policy change, we salute and follow orders. The other thing to keep in mind is, you know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is always lumped in with things like gay marriage, but it is a completely different animal, because it's not, you know, just not firing someone because they happen to be found out to be gay is different than, you know, approving of same-sex marriage or some of the other issues.
But it is a gay rights issue. I mean, it is an issue. I mean, at the core of it, I certainly understand what you're saying, but at the core of it, it is that gay men and women want what everyone else has, that there is a fairness issue involved.
That's true. And, you know, the other thing I would say to keep in mind, too, on this and whether or not society would have accepted it back in 1993 is, you know, I mean, look at the analogy of the integration of African Americans in the military. When that was done in the late 40s, most of the South was still segregated. Society was definitely not ready to accept that.
Right.
But, you know, Executive Order 9981 was issued. Even back then, it took a little, you know, there was a lot more grumbling. It took a, you know, a little bit more time to compel compliance, sure, even within the military. But they did it. And society on the whole certainly wasn't ready for integration, but the military decided it was best for them. And they, you know, the order was given, and they did it. So
that's a great point. When you look at the actual fight, and the book is fascinating because you outline what it ultimately took to change this and to repeal this policy, and as the subtitle states, behind the scenes in the war to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. To you, was there a seminal moment where you said, okay, you know, this is what it's going to take to do it, and we have achieved that?
You know, I don't think there was one moment in particular where I had a realization like that, because I think for those of us who were sort of in the thick of it politically, it was kind of like, it was such an all-consuming set of events that, you know, we were just sort of operating day-to-day and responding and trying to keep up with how fast things were moving. I mean, it was kind of like drinking water from a fire hydrant,
right,
keeping up with this movement. You know, when the president mentioned Don't Ask, Don't Tell in his State of the Union address in early 2010, that's when the go button was really pressed and the issue accelerated. And I think none of us in the movement were adequately prepared for the onslaught, the flood that would follow, and how quickly things would develop. And that was certainly great that things, you know, were accelerated at that point. But for us, it was, you know, reaction day by day, trying to keep up with what was going on, but also trying to proactively push the movement forward, our own, you know, ourselves, through various initiatives and education campaigns and lobbying and things of that nature. So I would say that I don't know that there was really one sort of seminal moment when we really sort of realized that, but it was, you know, it was an ongoing series of just, honestly, it was kind of like drinking water from a fire hydrant the whole time.
We only have less than a minute left, but I am curious as to now, with the repeal, that this organization that you have founded and are executive director of, Service Members United, obviously is still very much in business. So your goals now are different, but still very strong.
They are, and you know, that's been a big part of our identity for the past year. Is Service Members United was founded to give a voice and a seat at the table to those who were actually impacted by the policy issue in question being debated. And that, you know, that was Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that policy issue has obviously been resolved now. We've had a year of implementation, and that has gone phenomenally well. So the next phase in the fight for equality for gays and lesbians in the military and in the armed forces community is obviously centers around family recognition, partner benefits, things of that nature. You know, of course, men and women in the military who are gay and lesbian are still treated differently because they don't have access to a lot of the same benefits, some because of internal DOD regulation, some because of the Defense of Marriage Act still being on the books. But that's sort of the next stage in the fight. And, you know, our successor organization, we're transitioning to an organization that's putting the actual partners of gay and lesbian service members at the fore of this debate now that this is becoming the main issue. And that successor organization that we're molding and transitioning to, the American Military Partner Association, is taking the banner forward on that fight for us.
The name of the book is Fighting to Serve. Alexander Nicholson, thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.